Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Immigrantly. I am your host, Adia Khan. You know what? This year has been full of no BS conversations, from exploring the depths of our emotions to navigating the complexities of faith. And today we are diving into something just as profound. Legacy. It's a word that sounds heavy, doesn't it? If I'm being honest, it's not something I think about often, maybe because the idea of intentionally orchestrating what to pass on to my kids feels overwhelming to me. I mean, isn't life chaotic enough without adding this insatiable pressure of creating some grand goalpost? But here's the thing. I've come to realize that legacy doesn't have to be about building monuments or checking off a list of what future generations should inherit. It can be about something much more personal, more fluid, and maybe even more radical. That's why I am thrilled to welcome today's guest, Shauna Wells. Shauna is the host of Legacy, Lyrics, and Life, a podcast where she explores how music intertwines with our personal narratives to shape the legacies we build.
My name is Shauna Wells. I'm a mom, a friend, an activist, a business owner, an educator, and a legacy architect. And I have been on a journey to answer one question: why are you here? And along the way, as I've explored that question, I've learned a lot about who I am, who I'm not, the hopes and the dreams that my ancestors had, the traumas they experienced.
Through her work, she challenges the conventional idea that legacy is just about what we leave behind. Instead, she argues that it's about how we live today, connect with others, and embrace our own stories. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Shauna, welcome to Immigrantly. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay today. How are you doing?
I am doing okay as well. You know, what an apt time and day to have this conversation about legacy. It seems like the U.S. is holding so many contradictions today. Today is MLK Day. Then we have inauguration of our 47th president.
The golden age of America begins right now.
How do you see America's legacy in this moment?
I actually see it loud and clear. I've been talking with the folks that we work with around the paradox of today. The true question that America has always asked itself, which is, who are we and what do we stand for? And at different times, people have held the mic on that differently. And today, there are two paradoxical legacies at play. One that proposed a dream, which certainly not by himself, right? We've got a long list of people behind him, particularly women who have held up the truths of a movement and a conversation, just not just for Black Americans, for all Americans. I believe that if America is made for Black Americans, then it's made for all Americans. And so there's that conversation. And then there's a group of people who stand to hold systems that have become legacy in this country. It's a complicated promise America's made, isn't it? And so the conversation, I think, has always been at odds. And to expect it to have gone away over generations, particularly the enslavement of so many, and then claiming freedom. To expect that conversation to just disappear without actually truly addressing it, and I believe we can address it, it's going to take a Herculean effort, and people have to have the will and the skill to do it. Emphasis on the skill. And so we are faced, I think, with an important conversation today and every day on who are we and what do we stand for.
Yeah, but the irony is, Shauna, a lot of people in the US believe in the other side of the legacy, the dichotomy that exists. And as you pointed out, we may think that people don't have the skill. I think people know, but they don't want to acknowledge it because it serves them in some ways. So how do we move past that legacy? And especially as a legacy architect, as somebody who works in this space, how do we pivot towards a more nuanced legacy for America?
So beautifully said, that word nuance. That's what it is, right? We are never going to get to perfection if we strive for that. I think
exactly. It's
just we are not going to get there. And I don't think we have to, right? The beautiful complexity of humanity is that we're all wildly imperfect. And just that acceptance that we're all wildly imperfect is part of it. And as I work with leaders across multiple sectors, the question that I ask them is, are you first in your lineage to experience power, access, or wealth? And we work with first generation folks who are not first generation to this country, but first generation to accepting that as part of who they are. And the answer to that question actually starts to unravel then our relationship with the country and our relationship with the policies, our relationship with how we have come to know who we are, particularly as American people. And if you ask somebody, what does it mean to be American? I ask my kids this all the time. We don't know, right? There's typically something about a flag and pride and hardworking and pull yourself up and all of those things that are part of the history of this country and also deeply problematic. So your question, how do we grapple with the nuance? The first step really is to think about what's the declaration that I'm willing to make on behalf of the legacy I aim to leave, and what does that mean for the generations to come? And in particular, for those of us who are part of the sandwich generation, which means we're in between our children or the generation of children. I believe the children are all of ours. And we're in between the generation of the boomers or the folks who are starting to leave the workforce. We have to make sense of these truths because we're living in their definition of success, which for them worked, and we're creating a new definition of success. So that is a very nuanced process.
That's such an important point because we are struggling to create that new sense of success through our kids' lens because we are so entrenched in what was passed on to us. And me being a first generation immigrant, I have adapted to that idea of success that earlier generations passed on in this country, which is so sad. There is a lot of learning that I am doing on my end to understand that success is not defined by the way it was defined by boomers or earlier generations. And it's hard. There is a lot of judgment, right? Even when I look at my kids, I judge them.
Thank you for your candor there, because that's a hard thing to grapple with, right? Is that here we are raised by the last generation, which I would say they did the best they could with what they had. I mean, truly, when you go back and think about women in this country didn't have even access to credit until the 1970s, that's my parents' generation, right? And so that factors in, that plays a lot. That means you're fighting for the ability to buy a home, that you're fighting for the ability to establish yourself independent of someone else or a marriage. We can talk about all the social implications of that. And our kids will never know that truth.
Yeah, but it seems like America is regressing at this point. They may end up knowing some of the struggles that women face in this country.
I 100% agree with you that I think we're going to have to come in contact with some very difficult conversations.
But going back to earlier generations, Shauna, you brought up an important point. You talk about their struggles, something that a lot of times we don't contextualize when we think about them, or in some ways we judge them. But at the same time, I feel like they are so focused on the struggles that they had to go through that they've absolved themselves from accountability that needs to come through that process. Do you see that happening again within the conversation of what we pass on to our future generations?
Yes. Well, the generational work we do is important because, and I'll just speak about my own family, my mom did the best she could with what she had. Not a single mom, but certainly singularly responsible for many things in my life, and came from a generation of women who were taught, you work hard, you say yes, you have the priest over every Sunday, regardless of whether or not you want to do it, you have 7 kids, and you make sure that they have enough to eat, and they follow every single rule, and they go to confession and do all the things, right? All the rules that, you know, we all have our own set of rules, but certainly described by a set of principles that if you go outside of them, you're wrong. So that's, my mom grew up in that, right? And at some point she was a sandwich generation, right? Each generation experiences their sandwich, right? And so that was hers. And as I think about where she is now, one of the first, actually all the women in her generation, when I told them that I was going to continue to travel for work, I travel for work, I travel to our clients and I see them in action, I see their impact. They said, well, who's going to take care of the kids? Oh. And I said, their dad.
And what was their reaction?
You know, there's 2 people in this, right? And first shock, and this is what I want to address your question with, which is, it was almost as if they could not fathom that that could be a reality. And because of that, it limited their ideas of possibility, which put them into a stage of judgment. That certainly wasn't true for me. And so if that can't be true, then I should judge it. And I think that's a very normal human reaction. The issue is we have a whole generation of people doing that, right? And so it makes it really tough for us to be able to say, actually, I believe in all of these possibilities. And I believe in existence as a caretaker, as a mom, as a caregiver, as a woman in this world. Differently. I believe that it could look different. That's really hard for them to engage in dialogue because they don't have the picture.
Oh my gosh. I love what you're saying. Going back to work ethic, if people are taught to work a certain way and have a certain kind of values around work and career, and those values are being challenged by Gen Z, right? It's difficult for them to fathom how there can be work-life balance because they don't have it, or the earlier generations did not have it. And then what they do is they start judging. The judgment comes from, hey, I did not have this.
Yes.
I don't think it'll work because it didn't work for me.
And there's a lot of hurt and pain.
There is hurt, yes.
Reconciling that they're trying to do as they're talking with us. I can't imagine what that's like. And I'm sure we'll have our own version of that as we talk to the children who are coming behind us and as they get older. But I have FaceTime that I can talk to my kids on, which is something my mom never had, right? Or that generation never had. I have the ability to pump my breast milk, right? And send it. I can ship it back home. I mean, that is mind blowing to the generations who came before us. And so sometimes when I'm in these conversations generationally, I have to remember the circumstances have changed. And so what I'm feeling as pressure or judgment or question asking is actually coming from a place of maybe not knowing or understanding in the scope of our elders is really hard for me to understand sometimes. So like, you're supposed to know, you're actually supposed to be giving me the blueprint. Yeah. And I think that's the work of legacy, especially for this generation, is that to say, is, what's yeah. the blueprint you want to live by? Because living by the old blueprint is just going to get us what we've always gotten.
Jonna, I want to pivot to your personal journey with legacy, especially. You call yourself legacy architect, right? How do you define that?
Let's go back in time to when I discovered legacy. I'm a believer in when things come to us and they are ours, they keep coming back until we accept that they're ours. So I started my journey, I was a teacher for fifth grade students. So those of you who are listening, if you're teachers, I love and care about the work that you do, and you're doing some of the most important work raising the next generation. It is important for all of us.
Absolutely.
Love to all the teachers out there. I moved on to being a principal, and in my second year as principal, which I was 26 when I became a principal. So the thing I say is not in to be braggadocious, but more to be like, I had no idea what the heck I was doing. The first day of school, I looked around for someone who was in charge and realized it was me.
Oh, wow.
I had this opportunity to see what it means to build community and what that community can do over time for a city and for a larger community that it's inside of. But I say that because after my second year as principal, they asked me to start coaching other principals. And inside of the network that I was working in, what would happen is I would work with mostly Black women, which is one of my favorite places to be. And as we were talking, what I realized is the work that we've chosen to do is not because we've chosen a profession or career, we've chosen a calling. And I don't mean calling in the sense of a religious calling. I mean calling in the sense of I am being called to do work on behalf of a generation coming after me. And much of what we were talking about was this. It wasn't really about how do I get these reading lessons right. It was how do I build this beautiful mosaic of experiences for our students and our children to be able to lead on behalf of the next generation. I didn't have the name legacy yet. But that was the commonality and the pressure of that. As you can imagine, the weight is just like I'm putting my hands on my shoulder because the weight just felt so heavy. And it felt so heavy in that I would ask leaders, how are you doing? And most often would get tears, right? Constant burnout. And as we started to think about legacy, we then started to access our ancestors. What did they mean by legacy? Because people have been talking about legacy forever. I've just had a chance to think about what does it mean in today's context. And what we've come to learn is that legacy is getting in touch with the people who have come before us, our conversation earlier, to discover what are the things that they were working to pass on, because they were working to pass on a better life, right? What are the things that we have come to be over the course of our lifetime from age zero to the current age we are? And what do we hope to see as we look forward generationally?
Jonna, do you think legacy can ever be selfish?
I think we all have an agenda. So the thing about legacy when people come to us is they want to see the beauty in it. We are here in this moment in time as a result of legacies that have been passed on generationally. So with anything, there's a sunny side of the street and there's a shadow side of the street. And the antidote to that is knowing, right? Knowing that there are two sides to every legacy, to every story, to every human, to every value. Everything we do, there is an equilibrium that needs to be created. And you used the word balance earlier. We say equilibrium, because on any given day, you might be accessing part of the shadow side of the street or part of the sunny side of the street. The question for you is, who am I? And what am I willing to stand by?
What's fascinating to me about conversation around legacy and how you frame it for an immigrant like myself, I feel if I were in Pakistan still, where I grew up, I would have a different kind of legacy or the need for it.
Mm.
But now that I am in the US, that chain or that thread in some ways has been disrupted because now I am raising my kids in a different environment. I had to acclimatize myself to this environment. And how does my legacy shape out now? And how do I connect it to my ancestors who live in a different country, who experienced different circumstances?
What have you tried on that front as you ask yourself that question?
I haven't, because I don't think about legacy. I'm like, okay, once I'm dead, I'll be long gone. Whatever my kids do and how they shape their lives and what they pass on to their kids is their decision. Sometimes I feel like engineering that in my present day seems selfish. And that's why I asked you if legacy can be selfish. It seems to me as if we are trying to control what will happen in the next 100 years. And I don't give a fuck once I'm dead and gone. So that's why I haven't really thought through it. But something that I was thinking about after listening to your podcast and listening to your conversations was, for an immigrant, how does that legacy shape up?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I love this. And thanks for permission to drop F-bombs, because I often drop them. So I'll never know, right? I'm always like, what are we gonna? So it's an interesting point you bring up, right? Because one of the hardest things about talking about legacy is that people have to come into contact with their own finite time on the planet.
And it's scary.
It's really a scary thing to start to look at that face to face.
Yeah.
I actually find it very liberating. I'm like, okay, great. So I have a finite amount of time. There are infinite possibilities. It is not my job to contribute or to control everything. In fact, there is actually very little that we can control besides ourselves. And so often what I say to folks is, listen, we're leaving a legacy whether we want to or not. Our kids will repeat words that we say. They probably already are. I know there are a couple of choice words I don't want my kids to repeat that they are often repeating. I remember circumstances that the generation before me created for me. Do I remember the names of every single ancestor that contributed to my life? No. But if we really think about even this moment, us talking on this podcast, on this technology, think about all of the yeses and nos that led us to this. And so I actually think part of acceptance on that is the ability to say, I am actually bigger. But the essence of me is bigger than what I think.
I get what you're saying, yeah. But for me, going back to this idea of I am the first generation in this country, Shauna. So the burden, the onus of creating that legacy here in the US is a lot, because there isn't much that I can pull from. In values, yes, of course I can. But even that gets diluted, right? Because the environment is so different. The value system is different, you know, individualistic versus collective, focused on community and family versus focused on an individual, relationship with state versus relationship with community. If I think intentionally about legacy, it's just so overwhelming. Where do I start as an immigrant?
Yeah, contextually, it's like this is a lot to take in, research, and then create the thesis statement. And that's what I say to folks, like your legacy statement is the thesis statement for your life. What do you actually want? And how do you want to do it? And so I'm going to share with you six ways that we think about legacy, because I think it helps organize some thinking. The thing about the word is it takes on a life of its own. So sometimes clients come and they're like, I don't know where to start. And I'm like, no, let's just make it a little smaller. So the first way to think about legacy is multi-generational impact. And when we think about that, we think about it beyond the cash, right? Because that's how people talk about legacy. Let me leave cash and a name. That's societally been driven, particularly in this country, as worth and value. And of course it's worth, but money's just data, right? And so how do we choice make inside of that? So we talk about legacy by way of the six realms. The first is that we leave a legacy of play. How do you play? What do your children see you do as you play? We leave a legacy of work. How do you work? What are the values you accept? What do you not accept as part of your work? We leave a legacy of well-being. How are we and how do we take care of ourselves spiritually, emotionally, physically? We leave a legacy of community and relationship. How do we engage with community and relationship? And how do we use some of the smaller ways that our ancestors engaged in community to help us make realities here? We leave a legacy of service. How do we decide to serve? And that's different than work. Many of the folks we work with have trouble taking the two apart. And what I say is, work is work. You go home from a job and you also receive something in return, whether that's money or health insurance or however, you get some material thing in return. And services, you give something and you receive perhaps joy in return or meaning in return, but there's no exchange of goods.
It's altruistic.
Yeah. Yeah. And when we confuse service, when we're like, I live a life of service, I said before, I believe everybody has an agenda. We can get resentful of that service. And so that's why we set it apart as its own realm. Financial freedom is the last realm. And this, we say freedom and not wealth, because we all define wealth differently. And so financial freedom is really, do you have what you need to do what you want? The generation behind us will inherit the deeds that are inside of those six realms, for better or for worse, to your point earlier.
And they will change. They will, you know, probably adapt, but at the same time, they will make that legacy their own. And hence, legacy being fluid is an important point, right? Because a lot of times people think legacy is static. It's what you pass on and it doesn't change, but it does. How can it not change with every generation? To pivot to your legacy.
Yes, yes.
When was the last time you questioned your own legacy statement? And here's why I asked this question. I was listening to your podcast, and I believe the first legacy statement that you made, you were like, oh, it was so flat. And I paused for a minute and I was like, but what's wrong with that? What's wrong with having a flat legacy statement? Maybe that's how you wanted to define your legacy. But anyways, going back to my question, when was the last time you questioned it and what did you do about it?
Thank you for asking. So yeah, you know, this legacy work is, we both do it. We do it at our company and we do it ourselves because, you know, you have to practice it. And legacy is a practice. And you talked about the fluidity of exploring and examining self and then figuring out what is the impact you're making on others is really the work of legacy. So my personal legacy statement, the first time I wrote it, what I mean by flat, there's a difference between flat and simple. So flat, it was only about work. And it was this articulation of, here's what I'm gonna do in my lifetime. You take work away and that's it, right? And back to our very first, you know, we were talking about the thing that we got from the generation that came before us. What I got was a pretty damn good work ethic. I know how to work and I know how to create a dollar out of 15 cents. I can do that. And I watched the generations before me borrow against their health, against their relationships, against their joy. And so my first legacy statement was really an articulation of work.
I really like how you frame it, borrow against.
Yes.
Because that's what all of us are doing. There is this compromise in some ways that we keep making as to what we give in order to take. And a lot of times we give things that matter so much. Our family, relationships, time with family, our own well-being for what we take, which is work and wealth.
Yes. And it's got to be more than that, right? Because work and wealth are a made up concept, right? Well, what I know is I can feel in my body when I'm ill. I can feel in my body when I'm not in the kind of relationship I want to be in with others. My heart beats, my stomach hurts, right? Those things I feel in my body. So I know it's a human thing to do those. And what we've done is we've replaced completely those sensations with production. And we need purpose there, or meaning there, or intention there to help us live inside what is the human condition. And it is not working 24 hours a day, right?
But Jonna, some people listening may say that we need wealth and work to achieve all the other goals that we set for ourselves, because it's not possible to take care of ourselves, our well-being, to take vacations, to spend time with family, unless we have money to do that, especially in a country like the US. So what do you say to them?
This is a common, I think, tension in the work. And so I want to share two thoughts. The first is that the definitions of how we care for ourselves, we've warped them over time. When I first ask people, when we're thinking about what's the legacy you're leaving, when I say, what's the legacy of well-being you're leaving, most people answer with something like, you know, I take time to go on vacation, or I take time to go to the spa. I say, right, after you leave that, how do you feel? And most people, when they come back from vacation, you know, you talk to somebody after they come back from vacation, they're like, I'm exhausted. I'm like, yes, because I'm not sure that you're clear on what I call your energy and fuel in the energy circumference of where you live, right? And what you do. And so for me, back to the legacy statement, when's the last time I interrogated it? The last thing that I say in my legacy statement is, and I will get my energy from. And that is actually the most important place to think of. It's are you getting your energy from your wealth? And some people, the answer to that is going to be yes. Not for all of us. And so the question is to interrogate candidly, where am I getting my energy from? And how do I sustain that? The second piece of that is, I just call bullshit sometimes on having to have so much. And the question is, what's enough for you to live the life that you intend? Which is why we position it as financial freedom. And so one of the first exercises we work with people on is, tell me, what is your best legacy day? The day that you think you are leaving your most intricate, loving, aligned legacy. Tell me how it starts. What are you eating? Who are you with? What are you doing? Who are the people that are surrounding you? What are you wearing? And I have not encountered a time where someone says something so simple that doesn't cost anything. The last time I did it, somebody said, I make my bed in the morning because it gives me energy when I come home. The idea of this legacy, we've made it so big, and it's like, it's actually not that complicated.
Is there anything about your legacy that you're scared of or fearful of?
100%. This tension that you're bringing up around, how do I set my kids up? And I have my own children, right? But if I didn't have children, kids for me would be the community that I work inside of. The way that I say it is, I get energy from children, and I do. How do I actually create the equilibrium that I need to create for myself while still ensuring that the ways I believe we can give to the next generation are clear, intentional, and sustaining? And so the short version of that is, I have to be sure that I've created in my life enough equilibrium to not be exhausted at the end of the day, to not know myself, and to, when you're exhausted, you act outside of your legacy. And that's really quite, when you accept that, whoa, that's a heck of a responsibility, right? Like, but if I'm not working towards that, what am I really doing, right? Because otherwise I'm spending a lot of time and energy working towards the definition of someone else's version of success.
Shauna, do you hold on to traditional notions of legacy still? For instance, family values, cultural practices, even material wealth. What is one thing within that traditional legacy space that you still cherish and want to pass on to your kids or future generations?
I'll tell you, I have a longing. And you spoke a little bit to this, but you know, I'm biracial. My ancestors, some of them chose to be here and some of them did not. And inside of me lives that tension of people who came to this country for better and people who were forced to come here, right? And in both realities, this assimilation happened to try to make their way here. I think probably that's the most compelling part of legacy for me, is that it means I can say out loud, I give a damn about this. I'm going to create tradition and care around this. And I'm going to actually, someone said, for me, legacy is cycle disruption. And so for me, I commit to disrupting this cycle of erasure. So what does that mean? It means I have to find in the scraps of paper and the books and the photos, levels of tradition that got erased. And so my longing, and I think my life's wandering will be, how do we build tradition that embodies my own experience, but also calls back to experiences that were erased for my people? And how do I pass them on to the next generation so they do not forget? And I cherish the idea of tradition and ritual. If you were in my family, I'd be like, oh my gosh, another ritual, because I want them to create this sense of, we've been a part of a lineage of people. And as that lineage has evolved, it has progressed in the way it thinks about work and relationship and community and play and the rest of the sex realm. So thanks for asking that question. I think it's part of the work of legacy for me is to go back in time and try and piece together, well, why did my grandmother carry a medicine bag? What was in it? And is that something that I actually need to carry forward? Or this tomato sauce recipe, why do we put cinnamon in it? Why? It doesn't make any sense, right? All of the spices we could put in, why that, right? And what are the stories around that? And so for me, it's definitely been it's actually been a bridge to the last generation, because I can ask a question rooted in that, which has helped me figure out what are the traditions we need to carry forward.
And traditions in some ways become these physical manifestations of legacy. They are palpable, right? You can pass them on and you can see the effect. There are so many traditions that I should have passed on, because as I'm having this conversation with you, what I've also realized is subconscious erasure of our traditions for me that I haven't been able to pass on to my girls, because I don't think about them as much anymore, because I'm in this survival mode all the time. So it's like, I feel like it's time to just take a pause. Think about all the traditions of what my ancestors did. Maybe it's time to have a conversation with my parents back home. Shauna, do you sometimes fear that this obsession with leaving a mark on the world can sometimes stop us from living fully in the present?
I love this question, because I'm going to give you and your listeners a little bit of a tea. I don't think, you know, we say when we teach on legacy, legacy is a life well lived, which changes the vantage point, right? Of what I am here to do in the finite amount of time that I have could be simply to love myself. That could be enough of a generational disruption that it leaves a different legacy. It changes the course of history. And it could be that what you're here to do is to create the next big thing. I don't know. But it's yours.
But it's a lot of intentionality. It's a lot of awareness that as humans, we are not conditioned to do.
Well, we've been unconditioned to do it. And I'll tell you, so I live in Las Vegas, the city of possibility and the city of distraction. And I love where I live. It's taught me a lot. I'm from Philly, so it's a totally different landscape for me, as you can imagine. And one of the things that, you know, the first lesson I learned when I got to Las Vegas was look up and watch the signs. And the reason is because when you're inside of a casino, we are the only city that sells the same product for miles, right? When you're inside of a casino, it's designed to tap into something that's called temporal distraction. It's an actual science. And so there's no clocks. There's no windows. The carpets are very busy. The sounds attract you to hear. If you look up, you can see out. You can see your way, your path to getting to the other side, just getting to the freaking parking lot, right? But Vegas isn't the only spot where that exists. It may have birthed it, but everything is designed that way. And so we've been conditioned to play that way. We think we can multitask. You cannot. The brain actually doesn't function that way.
I thought I could. I take pride in that.
And, you know, I used to say to my students all the time, like, it's scientifically actually impossible because as quickly as you can do it, you can probably move from back and forth from things. I bet that you're very good at that, but your brain is not actually focused on both at the same time. So in this world, think about what we even put in front of our children. We put video games, which, fine. Right? But those are very high intensity, distracting things. We have toys that make noise that just keep them plugged in. And so we have been conditioned over time to pay attention to life at that pace. And so to your point, it does take some intentionality to start to pull the layers back. The driving truth of legacy is that it's a declaration of who you want to be. So it gives you the will to want to do that because that is very hard.
Yeah. Oh, America, let's do a big exhale, all of us together. Shauna, you also bring lyrics into your conversations. And I am going to connect my last question and ask you to share a song that you think is apt for it. So I ask my guests in the end to define the United States of America in a word or a sentence. In the context of legacy, we started with US having this paradoxical legacy, and we'll end it with that. How do you define the US? And give me a song that we can play in the end.
Thank you. Yes, I've been listening to how people have answered this question. But I didn't know you're going to ask me about this song. So I would say the song that I most often internalize as the experience here for me and the people that have come before me is A Change Is Gonna Come.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long.
And both the context of the song and the actual words of the song, I think, are apropos for these times. And here's the reality: a change is always going to come, for better or for worse. And what I often say with legacy is, it's all possible, and possibility just doesn't mean the good. It can also mean the stuff that isn't so great. And we've got to be prepared for how we, all we can control is how we respond to it. And so change is going to come. I think we're all holding our breath. For some of us, we are activating our breath. And for some of us, we're waiting to breathe, right? So as we move forward, we all, at least I, am preparing for the change that's going to come. For better or for worse.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
where can people find your podcast?
So you can find my podcast in all the normal places that you listen. We suggest Spotify and, of course, Apple. Come find us. And we are happy to engage in dialogue on legacy at any time. So we think it's some of the most important work in the world.
I will be thinking about legacy for a long time. Thank you for this wonderful conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. And let me know how it goes.
Legacy is a scary word for me. As I'm getting older, I feel I've lost so many years not thinking about it. So where do I start? And how do I connect what I've left behind in Pakistan to what I have experienced here? How do I pass it on to my daughters? And what elements of my legacy do I keep from them? It's a difficult thought. It requires a lot of work, intentionality, and soul searching. But you know what? I want to do it. I really do. But before I pass on something to my daughters, I want to reconnect with the legacy that my ancestors have passed on to me. And I know it got disrupted in some ways when I moved to the US, but I can still reclaim it. I can still own it, understand it, feel it, appreciate it. So my question to all of you, where are you in this legacy journey? Have you thought about it? Maybe you're too young to think about legacy, but you know what? The earlier, the better. Try doing that. Thank you for spending this time with me again. Please know that we are on all different social media platforms, including TikTok at Immigrantly Podcast, Instagram at Immigrantly Media. We have a channel on Apple Podcasts. Guys, if you like what you hear in this space, please subscribe to our channel. That's how we grow. We want to connect directly with our listeners, with all of you. So subscribe so that we know you're listening and you appreciate what we're creating. You can find all the information on our website, immigrantlypod.com. You can always write to me at sadia@immigrantlypod.com. This episode was produced and written by me. The editorial review is done by Shay Yu. Our editor and sound designer is Lou Raskin. Theme music for Immigrantly is done by Simon Hutchinson. Other music is by Epidemic Sound. Come back next week when we have another topic, another guest for all of you. Take care.